taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Welcome. I am still on the road. Today I'm recording from beautiful Thermopolis, Wyoming. I've been having a great time with this Knowing Your Rights tour. I've been back and forth across North Dakota. I'm heading through Wyoming. I get to go home soon, but I'm going to miss getting a chance to meet and greet people, and I'll talk a little bit more about the tour at the end of the program. But today I want to talk about, well, it's kind of revolves around this idea of who's in charge. Does the government run? Does the government have inherent power, or does it only get its power from our consent? Our consent when we form those governments through the Constitution. And I want to start out with an article I wrote about a question with eminent domain. Are you familiar with eminent domain? Do you know where that's authorized in the Constitution of the United States? Do you know the requirements and limitations of eminent domain? A recent case out of the Supreme Court shows just how dangerous it is for we the people not to know what the Constitution says. According to this court, not only does Congress have the authority to use eminent domain, but to authorize private companies to use that power for their own private gain. Sadly, not only the courts, but most Americans believe it's legal. First, we need to acknowledge that eminent domain is a legitimate power of government. Now, eminent domain is defined as the power to take private property for public use by a state, municipality, or private person or corporation authorized to exercise functions of public character, following the payment of just compensation to the owner of that property. It's just as important to know the limitations on this power established within the Constitution of the United States. These limitations are apparently lost on both Congress and the courts. From the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, quote, "Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." With this in mind, let's take a closer look at the problems with the case Penny's Pipeline versus New Jersey. Quote, "Congress passed the Natural Gas Act in 1938 to regulate the transportation and sale of natural gas in interstate commerce. To build an interstate pipeline, a natural gas company must obtain from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission a certificate reflecting that such construction is or will be required by the present or future public convenience and necessity." That's from 15 U.S.C. Section 717-FE. We start with an act of Congress, the Natural Gas Act, passed in 1938. In its very first sentence, the court has already made a mistake. Congress has the authorization to regulate interstate commerce, not interstate transportation. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the Constitution grants to Congress the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. This problem is only a tiny semantic difficulty in this case. 15 U.S.C. 717-FC does state that the commission may issue a certificate of public convenience and necessity to a natural gas company for the transportation and interstate commerce of natural gas used by any person for one or more high priority uses as defined by rule by the commission in the case of A, natural gas sold by the producer to such person, and B, natural gas produced by such person. That sounds good so far, right? The commission set up by Congress may issue certificates of public convenience and necessity to those who wish to sell natural gas across state lines. That, however, is not the entire law. See, Section 717A states, as disclosed in reports of the Federal Trade Commission made pursuant to Senate Resolution 83, 70th Congress, First Session, and other reports made pursuant to the authority of Congress, it is declared that the business of transporting and selling natural gas for ultimate distribution to the public is affected with a public interest, and that the federal regulation in matters relating to the transportation of natural gas and the sale of in interstate and foreign commerce is necessary in the public interest. See, Congress simply declared that transporting and selling natural gas to the public is a public interest. And therefore, interstate and foreign commerce
See, in other words, Congress effectively declared that any public interest was suddenly interstate commerce, regardless if it crossed state or national borders. Suddenly, Congress claimed the authority to regulate whatever they considered a public interest. Well, this case does involve interstate commerce. We should recognize that the law this court is using is already unconstitutional, illegal, and void. Now, back to the court's opinion. As originally enacted, the NGA did not provide a mechanism for certificate holders to secure property rights necessary to build pipelines, often leaving certificate holders with only an illusory right to build. The court notes that in the original NGA, there was no mechanism for certificate holders to secure property rights. It appears that to the court, this was a mistake, an oversight, while in fact, it was not only the law, it was the supreme law of the land. As I've already quoted, the Fifth Amendment allows private property to be taken only for public use. Yet Congress later claimed the authority not only to take private property for private use, but to authorize private entities to do so for it. In other words, the 1938 Natural Gas Act did not grant the power to secure property rights because the Constitution did not delegate that power to Congress. According to the court, Congress remedied this defect in 1947 by amending the NGA to authorize certificate holders to exercise the federal eminent domain power, thereby ensuring that certificates of public convenience and necessity could be given effect. Nowhere in the Constitution is the United States authorized to exercise eminent domain to transfer property from one private entity to another. What this court refers to as a defect is called the supreme law of the land. Furthermore, the Constitution does not authorize the United States to delegate its eminent domain power to someone else. Yet Congress simply spoke into existence this terrible power. Again, from the opinion, when any holder of a certificate of public convenience and necessity cannot acquire by contract or is unable to agree with the owner of the property to the compensation to be paid, the necessary right of way to construct, operate, and maintain a pipeline or pipelines for the transportation of natural gas and the necessary land or other property in addition to right of way for the location of compressor stations, pressure apparatus, or other stations or equipment necessary to the proper operation of such pipeline or pipelines, it may acquire the same by the exercise of the right of eminent domain in the district court of the United States for the district in which such property may be located or in the state courts. See, Congress simply decided that they had the power to do whatever they think is necessary. This is not only a violation of the 10th Amendment, but the very structure of our republic. The 10th Amendment reads, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." If we had a properly functioning judicial system, one that placed the language of the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and was dedicated to opining justly in all its cases, well, this law would have been recognized as unconstitutional decades ago. Instead, this law has not only been allowed to stand, multiple courts have ignored their oaths to support the Constitution and allowed Congress to effectively rewrite it for their benefit. So much for checks and balances. Now, in their tradition of holding previous opinions above the Constitution, this court conveniently skips over the constitutional problems, then goes on further to destroy property rights in America. As relevant here, Penn East sought to condemn parcels of land in which either New Jersey or the New Jersey Conservation Foundation asserts a property interest. Notice a couple of very interesting points here. Two groups, both the state of New Jersey and the New Jersey Conservation Foundation, assert a property interest. These entities don't simply have property interests, they have property rights. The very same Fifth Amendment that Congress uses as their authority for eminent domain states, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." Now, some of you may say, "Wait, Paul, these aren't people. It's a state and an organization." But who controls the state of New Jersey? Who ultimately owns whatever is owned by the state of New Jersey? Don't we call it public land? Yes, the land of the state of New Jersey is public land, but does that give Congress the authority to take land from a state? No, it does not. And who owns the New Jersey Conservation Foundation? Who controls it? Isn't it the people who ultimately own these properties? And since this land is not being taken for public use, this is not a Fifth Amendment takings. What this is government-sanctioned theft with the blessing of the very same judicial branch that was created to protect our rights, including our right to property. Now, the court held Section 17FH authorizes FERC certificate holders to condemn all necessary rights of way, whether owned by private parties or states. Section 717FH of the Natural Gas Act is unconstitutional and therefore illegal and void. But this court simply ignores that inconvenient fact to get this opinion. Now, the preamble of the Constitution to the United States tells us, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." It is unfortunate, but what we have here is almost the exact opposite. We have a union that is being corrupted, justice that only exists for those who can pay for it. States are being pitted against each other. Those who are to defend us are being used to persecute us, and the welfare of the powerful few is placed above the general population. Worst of all, the blessings of liberty are being ground under the foot of an ever more tyrannical government. This case is just the latest example of the failure of expecting those in government to act as a check and balance against each other. And every time states allow themselves and their citizens to be treated as subject of the federal government, freedom and liberty in America die just that much more. This is why John Jay said, "Every member of the state ought diligently to read and to study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they'll sooner perceive when they are violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them." Because the American people are generally ignorant of their Constitution, their rights are being violated and they don't even know it. Because we expected the government to teach the rising generation to be free rather than doing it ourselves, the idea of freedom and liberty has become anathema to this generation. Because of our ignorance, we don't know how to defend and assert our rights. Also, because of this ignorance, all branches of governments at all levels are well on their way to converting the United States of America from the land of the free to the land of the subjected. The fact that we are letting this happen proves that we are no longer the home of the brave, but the home of cowards. The only reason for hope is that there is still a small glowing ember of the sacred fire of liberty. The question is, will the people of New Jersey, with the help of patriots across the nation, help fan that ember of liberty? Or will it be crushed by those who pervert the Constitution?
As I said, this case is an excellent example of why we the people need to read and study the Constitution, why we need to know our rights. This case is not a Fifth Amendment taking, as has often been described. It's theft. This is not being taken for public use. This is being given to a private company. And this is not the first time this has happened. But because we still remain ignorant and we still remain afraid of our government, this will keep happening over and over and over again. And this abuse of the so-called eminent domain, or just the general powers of government, will continue until they're stopped. And we need to treat those in government employ rather like spoiled brat children. I mean, they will continue to do whatever they get away with until finally there's some punishment, something that deters them. For example, I saw this interesting article about issues with the General Counsel for the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. It seems that they are so incestuous in their hiring practices that all of their lawyers have conflicts of interest. They're forced to recuse themselves or in some other way leave the agency, leave the general counsel, and they don't have anyone to give them legal advice. So they're basically issuing waivers. They're allowing lawyers with a definitive conflict of interest. They are offering opinions to the EPA on cases that either it's their clients or they've done work on before. Because this whole governmental bureaucracy, they keep bouncing from place to place. Now, if the Environmental Protection Agency is allowed to simply waive issues with conflict of interest, how is the poor U.S. citizen supposed to get a a fair hearing when the deck starts out loaded against them. We see it also with the recent extension of the CDC eviction moratorium. Now, the reporting on this moratorium and the legal case around it has been atrocious. The Supreme Court never said it was unconstitutional. They just said the CDC didn't have the legal authority to issue the moratorium. But you've also seen people all bent out of shape because the President of the United States extended the moratorium, even though the Supreme Court said CDC didn't have the legal authority, as if this is some constitutional crisis, forgetting that the courts have no authority to order, to mandate that the federal government do anything, that the executive branch do anything. That was the whole reason for the Marbury versus Madison case, or the whole underlying question was, could the court actually order James Madison to sign the commissions for the judges that were not signed by the previous administration? We see this also in another story that kind of flown under the radar a little bit. President Biden has extended a moratorium on student loan repayment. So here, once again, we have the federal government, which has effectively taken over the student loan program, a constitutional issue in itself, a constitutional crime in itself. And now we have the executive branch unilaterally determining whether or not or how long they will waive the payments, how long they'll delay punishment for payments. Does this sound like a republic? Does this sound like a government where the representatives of the people get to exercise their power, get to exercise the power of the people? Or does it sound more and more, as I said before, like a kingdom where the federal government, where the executive bureaucracy simply does whatever it wants and waits to see if somebody slaps them on the wrist? Sadly, too often, nobody slaps them on the wrist. So we end up stuck in this quasi-republic, quasi-kingdom, and in many cases, completely repeating the mistakes that the King George made with the colonists. We have the federal government doing exactly what led our colonists to seek independence. And the American people sit back and let it happen. And I think in large part because the American people don't know, they don't recognize, they don't understand. They've not been taught the Constitution. They've not been taught to be free. But I also think it's a lot of apathy. They're distracted with the bread and circuses we find, whether it's the news programs or YouTube or Facebook or whatever the issue du jour is. More and more we have government acting as a thief. The federal government's either going to steal your money because they're collecting taxes for things to pay for things they're not authorized to, or they're going to steal your money by issuing a moratorium that says you can't do business or you can't collect or you can't evict someone who isn't paying you rent, or they're going to take your money for these student loans and then not have them repaid. All of these are examples of theft. Now, before you as an American citizen start pointing your fingers in Washington and saying, yeah, it's all their fault, remember, you accepted the bribe. See, it's the American people that thought it would be a good thing if the government took over the student loan system so that they could forgive the debts. I remember having this discussion with a friend of ours who was extremely upset that the government wouldn't simply forgive her student loans. To me, that makes no sense. If you borrowed money and promised to pay it back, why can you be upset when they actually expect you to pay it back? See, by accepting these programs with the expectation that either someone else will pay for it or you'll be forgiven the debt, you accepted the bribe. We've accepted the bribe of the student loan program. We've accepted the bribe of the CDC rent moratorium. And we've accepted, as part of that, the power of the federal government to simply dictate what the Constitution says, when it's actually the other way around. The Constitution dictates what the federal government can do. So part of the reason I've been traveling the country, part of the reason I'm recording this on the road in a hotel room rather than back in my office is to help teach people that they are not subjects of government. They are not bound by the will of government. The government is bound by the will of the people. It is bound by our consent. You know, the Declaration of Independence says that governments are instituted among men to protect our rights and derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. The Constitution is our consent to what a government can do, whether that be the federal government or one of our state governments. But those constitutions are not Marvel superheroes. They're not going to jump up and start dope slapping people in Washington or in our state houses. It's our legal authorization to say, no, we did not authorize this, therefore that is void and we will not comply. And before someone has a conniption fit, not only does Alexander Hamilton state that a law, that an act of a delegated authority contrary to its commission is void, the Supreme Court in the Marbury versus Madison case I mentioned before said that an act of Congress repugnant to the Constitution is void. It is empty. It is meaningless. But that does no good unless the people recognize what the limitations of government are and that when they act beyond those bounds, those acts are void. They're emptying. They're meaningless. That doesn't mean that we get to make up the rules all on our own. No, no, no. But it does mean that since we the people do ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States, it is up to we the people to enforce the Constitution of the United States. We do that first and foremost by vetting our representatives better. You know, we think of representatives as, you know, they're elected high officials and they assume titles and you know, honors. And no, they're servants. They work for us. They're our employees. And until we start hiring employees and making them follow the rules that they swore or affirmed to do so in their oath of office, then we no longer have a government of the people. We have a government that rules over the people. We no longer have self-government. What we have is the people choosing their own tyrants. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like the land of the free to me. And it certainly doesn't sound like a place where your rights are protected. And if you want an example of that, just look at what's been going on the last year and a half, 2 years. Where we watch the rights of the American people trampled and the vast majority of people simply begging at the foot of a government saying, please give me my rights back. It's saddening to me to see the American people reduced to being mere servants of government rather than its masters. And the only long-term solution I can think of is education, which is why I do this radio program. It's why I come to you 5 days a week to help open your eyes to see other possibilities from a constitutional standpoint. And if you want to find out more, please head to my website, constitutionstudy.com. All of the material on there is free to you to use, free for you to share, and to see maybe a different way, a better understanding of the Constitution can lead to a freer way of life. And if you want to find out more about the tour that I'm on, and maybe even invite me to come to your city, go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. You'll see the tour dates. You'll see a donation form if you want to support me. And you'll also see a form where you can request that I come to your city and do a Knowing Your Rights event there and help teach you about your rights and to show you that you don't have to be a subject of government, that our founding fathers recognized that we are its master, and learn a little bit about how you can once again be the we the people can be the master of our governments. Now, I've been on the road for several days. You know, on the road a lot, it's you can get worn down, and your immune system can get compromised. And of course, the last thing I want to do is get sick before I go home, so I've been using HealthyCell.com's Immune Super Boost every day to help keep me healthy, keep my body working right so that I can do all of these events and still remain healthy and alert and awake. I've been using REM Sleep to help me sleep All these products are available to you at a discount. Go to healthycell.com/outloud. You'll get 20% off your first order. Give it a try. Try any of their formulas. You can even sign up for a subscription, and save even more. So head over to healthycell.com/outloud and check out all their fine products and get your 20% discount.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the American people to be free, to be masters of their own government, to be citizens of a free republic. And we've been talking about this idea of government theft. You know, we establish rules for government. We set its boundaries. And, well, sadly, sometimes when we do that, either we don't hold them accountable or we set them a little too broadly. I mean, we've talked in the first half about government rewriting eminent domain laws to go beyond what the Constitution says. You know, Congress does have the authority to take private property for public use if they pay a fair price for it. But now we have government taking private property for private use and allowing them to, quote unquote, condemn the property, thereby lowering its property value so they're not paying a fair price for it. We talked about government taking over programs like student loan and then controlling the entire student loan system, something we never authorized them to do, and they get away with it. But I want to take a look at another idea. And that's this idea of changes to the death tax. Now, they don't call it the death tax. It's called, its proper name is the inheritance tax, but most people call it a death tax because, well, it happens when people die. You see, the 16th Amendment gave Congress the authority to collect direct taxes on income from any source. So we have a situation where, well, If someone dies and leaves you money, Congress said, nope, that's income, we can tax it. And since we never put any real boundaries on it, we simply said, yes, Congress can tax, and on anything they can consider income, surprise, surprise, governments like to take more and more power, and more stuff becomes subject to these types of taxes. Now, one thing that's been going on lately is the American Family Plans Act. They proposed changing part of the inheritance tax and repealing what's called the stepped-up basis. Now, I'm not a tax accountant, but as I understand it, the idea is, let's say your parents buy a house and they pay $50,000 for it. And upon their death, you inherit the house, and at that time, it's worth $100,000. Well, that would count towards your inheritance tax because the step-up basis means the basis of your tax is the value when you inherited it. now what they want to do is go back and say, well, no, since your parents didn't pay taxes on the appreciation from $50,000 to $100,000, they didn't pay those capital gains tax, we want you to pay the tax, that the capital gains on that tax plus the inheritance of $100,000. Let's face it, governments want money. Government bureaucrats, government elected officials, they're generally greedy and they want taxes wherever they can find them. But what really is what this article was about and what really saddens me is everyone thinks these are targeted at rich people. It's always sold as, you know, we're going to get the rich, we're going to tax the rich, we're going to bleed the rich. It'll only affect rich people, forgetting that many families may not be cash rich, but they may be property rich. You know, I drove through the Northern Plains and I saw these huge farms, you know, hundreds and thousands of acres in a single field, just square miles of farmland. And I wonder, what's the value of all that land? Land that's been in a family for sometimes three and four and five generations. And the cost of the equipment to efficiently farm that land. Equipment, you know, you've got multiple pieces of equipment worth hundreds of thousands of dollars each. Imagine you're a 21st century farmer. You maybe inherited your farm from your parents. You've invested your entire life in this farm. You spent every free dime to purchase the equipment necessary to make the farm more efficient. And then when you pass it on to your children, the government taxes it so hard they can't afford to keep it. I remember when I was younger, my grandparents, when they died, we had to sell their house in order to pay the taxes. We wanted to keep the house. I wanted to move there at some point, but we couldn't afford it because the taxes just made it financially ridiculous. It was unreasonable. We don't think of the consequences. We never stop to think as the American people that when we grant a power to Congress or to any part of the United States, they will always tend to push it as far as they can, whether it be taxes or any power we give them. They will always tend to push the limits and then go farther. And that's just, it's human nature. You know, we act as if someone who gets a government paycheck is suddenly altruistic and they only have the people's best interests in heart. But human nature and history shows differently. Everybody who gets a government paycheck is just as flawed as each and every one of us. And when we forget that, when we grant them powers without proper checks and limitations, if not you, your children or your children's children will end up paying the price for our lack of recognition that even if the person in office today is as pure as the wind-driven snow, it's likely the person in that office someday in the future won't be. Now, let me take a slightly different tack on this. And I saw this article that the Biden administration is, well, they say urging, I think it's pressuring, Democratic attorneys general to sue gun makers. Now, it has been a bete noir for the gun control advocates for decades to sue not the criminal who illegally uses the gun, but the manufacturer for daring to make it. I mean, that's really what's at the bottom of this. How dare you make a firearm that eventually got illegally used for some purpose that was completely outside the purview of the gun maker? And because of attempts during, I believe it was the Clinton administration, to, in effect, sue gun companies out of business, bringing ridiculous lawsuits and driving their legal costs to the point where they cannot do business, the federal government passed the Lawful Commerce in Arms, the Protection of the Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, which basically says, listen, you cannot sue a gun maker for the illegal use of a legally made product. Now, it gets misrepresented all the time. They're saying, you know, we can't sue gun makers. It's not what it says. It says you cannot sue gun makers for a legally made product. But of course, the Biden administration, once again, and again, it's nothing new. Most administrations ignore laws they find inconvenient. But here we have the Biden administration encouraging attorneys general, the states, to violate federal law and sue gun makers. I guess maybe he's assuming that the Supreme Court, you know, by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, the damage is already done. By the time it gets adjudicated, any suits against this, the cost to these gun manufacturers will be will just destroy their business model. I don't know. I'm not in this man's head, but what I do know is you have a president or a presidential administration urging, coercing, cajoling state attorneys general to break the law. Now, is that because he thinks the law is unconstitutional? He hasn't said so. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. Maybe that's it. Maybe he just doesn't like it. I've yet to see an argument that says it's unconstitutional. But I want to contrast this to another issue going on. See, on my tour stops, I always ask questions, and I frequently get questions about employer vaccine mandates and can employer force you to get the vaccine to work there? And I always make the distinction between public and private. A public employer cannot force you to get a vaccine because they are bound by the Constitution of the United States and of their state. But a private company is private property. And since they own the job, they can set the conditions that are necessary to employ you. And they can set those conditions. However, as I understand it, federal law makes the, because this is an emergency use authorization, this is, the vaccines are not an FDA authorized product, actually. It's not even considered a drug. Normally, the employers would be liable for any damages you incur from taking the vaccine. Now, federal law, the Congress has passed a law saying, well, no, we will protect you. You are, these employers, the vaccine companies, are supposed to be safe from federal lawsuit. Well, there's a problem with that. And that is, it violates the First Amendment to the United States. You see, the final clause in the First Amendment says that you will not be deprived the right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. In other words, how do you go to government and say, I have a problem, you know, I have a grievance, I want redress for it? And these general protections from lawsuit, these general immunities, even these limited immunities that are not based on a legal protection, are a violation of the First Amendment. And I'm waiting to find a law firm or a group that will help and sue to get the courts to recognize, hey, you're basically telling me that if I take this vaccine, I have no right to petition the government for redress of grievance. That if I take the vaccine, I'm waiving my right to a redress of grievance. Just one more reason why I won't take the vaccine. But if we compare that to the protection of lawful commerce and arms, the main distinction is, if you purchase a firearm and it's defective, let's say you take it to the range and you go to fire it and it malfunctions, or worst case scenario, it actually fails and you get hurt, well, you can sue the gun manufacturer because they sold you a defective weapon. But if you take a vaccine and there's an adverse reaction and the government said you can't sue, they're literally telling you, you do not have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. So all of you out there that are worried about employers or others mandating that you get the vaccine, let's see if we can get together. Let's see if we can find a law firm that will help us file the necessary paperwork and get that type of immunity thrown out of court. because the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law that will abridge the right to petition the government for redress of grievance. Now, I know, I'm sure there are gun grabbers out there that are would be more than happy to roll the Lawful Commerce and Arms Act in there, although I've already shown that that doesn't fit. But I want this lawsuit enforced, or at least in progress, that says you cannot deprive the American people of their right to sue any manufacturer for the effects of a the effects of a drug that hasn't been fully tested. And if they are forced by their employer to take a vaccine as a condition of work, they should be liable for the consequences of that. And when they say, when the government basically says, we're going to protect you from this, they are depriving you of one of those most basic rights. Not only the right to control your body, but the right to sue someone, to petition for a redress of a grievance. And sadly, most of the American people didn't realize that. In fact, at first, I didn't even think about it. I was thinking about the deprivation of liberty and deprivation of property, but it's also a First Amendment issue. So if you're interested, contact me either through the website or through my other website, constitutionstudy.com, and let's see what we can put together. And again, a type of theft I bet most of us haven't thought about. I saw this article that the federal government is exempting some illegal, they call them migrants, from the ID requirements to fly on American Airlines. Now, after 9/11, the security theater that was put in place, you know, the TSA and the porno scanners and the ID requirements, you know, and the fact that whenever they test these security measures, they fail 80-90% of the time. Forget about that. People are going crazy because certain states want to have a voter ID, a photo ID as a requirement to vote. And oh my God, you know, that's Jim Crow to make people, you know, show they are who they say they are. Ignoring all the other times photo IDs are required, including to fly. You know, I'm not flying recently because of the COVID nonsense from the airlines. You know, it's not that I'm worried about COVID. I don't trust the airlines to not become tyrants and force a needle in my arm, and they force you to wear a mask and all that stupid stuff. But here you have this. Well, yeah, we were told we had to put up with this to keep us safe. And now we have an administration telling us that as citizens, you need to show a photo ID. But if you come here illegally, you don't? That you're exempt? If you come here and break our laws, we're going to exempt you from that photo ID? Now, on the one hand, I mean, that's just an irrational point of view to say that illegal immigrants are freer than American citizens when it comes to air travel in the United States. That's what the Biden administration appears to be doing. The very idea that the federal government can impose on you a restriction on your liberty in the form of a photo ID. Now, they say they do it for the safety of society. It's not been shown to be effective, but at least okay, their argument, the evidence supporting their argument is weak, but at least it's got a sensible argument. What is a sensible argument to say that someone who broke the law to get here is exempt from that? I'm still waiting to hear that. I haven't heard anyone come up with the idea of the government can steal your liberty and that same government will grant greater liberties to someone who broke the law than to a law-abiding American citizen. This is more, it's theft. It's theft of our rights. It's theft of our way of life, of our control over our government. It's a theft of the rule of law. And sadly, far too many American citizens are simply sitting back and saying, well, what can I do? Or when we have Nancy Pelosi sending Capitol Police off Capitol Hill to open offices for the Capitol Police in Tampa and San Francisco. Now, I'm trying to figure out why the Capitol Police needs an office in Tampa and San Francisco. To me, that is simply, again, an expanding of control, a theft of your right to self-government. If they're concerned about security in the Capitol, why are they spending the time and money to open offices in these remote cities? What good is it? Why? They have no legal jurisdiction. They can't arrest anybody. They have no legal authority to request a warrant. But what we see is a further theft of liberty, an expansion of control from the federal government, assuming powers outside of its jurisdiction. And so far, I haven't seen anybody standing, very few individuals standing up against it. What I haven't seen are governors and mayors standing up and saying, no, you have no jurisdiction here. There's no reason for you to be here. You are not welcome here. And the fault of that is the people in those cities. Why did they intentionally hire such weaklings? I mean, I've seen Governor DeSantis stand up about other things. Why am I not seeing him stand up about this law enforcement? I don't know. I don't know what else is involved in this, but I think it's worth finding out, and I think we're going to be surprised months and years down the road when we find out what actually is going on here. I think it's going to be an unpleasant surprise at that. Okay, I have to hit the road soon, but before I do, I have a couple last articles. Both of them involve federal judges dealing with Biden administration rules. One about Biden's restrictions on the oil and gas leasing ban, and another one about some rules with the requirements for biofuels and refineries. And I'm going to take these both together because they are basically, for this conversation, they're related. It's the idea of the federal government controlling every aspect of our lives. The idea that the federal government has the authority to tell refiners what they have to refine. In a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court overturned a decision where the EPA was demanding that refineries in Wyoming, Utah, and Oklahoma waivers for a renewable fuel standard. And the very idea that the federal government has the authority to say, no, you're not allowed to make the fuels that you think will best serve your customers, that will do your business the best. No, you must use, you must produce what we need you to produce, what we think is best to produce. And I don't know about you, but not only does that sound socialist, the very idea, the very concept that those in government think they have the authority to tell you how to run your business, not simply dealing with interstate commerce, right? Yes, Congress has the authority to regulate interstate commerce, but we're talking about a federal administration demanding that certain types of fuels be created, not what a refinery may see as the most demand from their customers. Now, the other is an executive order that President Biden signed banning the renewal of gas and oil leases on federal land. And I find this interesting on two phases because I did some research and I was amazed. Something like 70 and 90% of the land is actually owned by the federal government. And I didn't understand why until I did some more research and found that the Enabling Acts, in other words, Congress can admit new states into the Union, and part of the requirement for a territory to become a state in the Union was for it to give over public lands to the federal government held in trust until those lands were disposed of. Well, the problem is the federal government never disposed of those lands. Now, the Constitution doesn't authorize the federal government to hold land for anything but forts, magazines, needful buildings, and of course, the District of Columbia, the seat of the federal government. But we see what happens. See, not only did the federal government basically embezzle this land from the western states, it said they would hold it and then dispose of it. They never disposed of it. But now they're using it as a cudgel. It's being used as a political weapon between the parties and their supporters of what will people be allowed to do on land that the federal government has seized through unethical means. Well, benefit of the doubt, right? Because I haven't actually looked at the clauses close enough to see if they are an actual violation of the Constitution. I think they are, because even Thomas Jefferson recognized that the Louisiana Purchase was not constitutional, and he hoped Congress would and the states would eventually kind of come back and agree with what he did. But again, we see government stealing from the people. They've stolen the state lands. They've stolen the authority to use land that is now claimed by the federal government. You need their permission to use this land, but it's land that the federal government doesn't have the legal authority to control. And you have government bureaucrats, government departments that are stealing the control, the control of the property of businesses. And we've become so used to this, we don't seem to think much about it. We seem to think this is normal. And that's why I say education is so important. It's why the people need to understand their rights, understand the Constitution, understand that they are not subject of government. Government is supposed to be subject to them. So I've already talked about the Knowing Your Rights tour. I want to send you, if you find out more, go to constitutionstudy.com. And if you go to the /tour, you'll find out more about the tour. I will come to your town if you can get a group of people together. And I don't charge for the event. I do this. Basically, all I ask is, how do we get my expenses covered? My travel, my living expenses. And I come and we do the event. And then I sell copies of my books and other tools to help you know what your rights are. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Constitution scholars. I haven't talked about them much here lately. I set it up earlier this year. You know, most people hear of a scholar, they think a scholar is an expert. Well, a scholar really means a student. See, I'm a constitutional scholar because I am a student of the Constitution. I'm always learning something about the Constitution. And you can too. If you go to constitutionscholars.com, you can sign up absolutely free. And the first thing you'll notice is I have these community groups set up. I have one set up for each state. I have one set up for the federal Constitution. And it's a place where we can find each other. You have your own user blog. There's a discussion forum. You can find friends and message between them. Also, we can help this educational process help all become students of the Constitution. I have a library of documents you can read there, videos you can watch. All of this is so that you can kind of get your feet wet. But I'm adding to this a mentoring program, a program for those who want to go beyond this self-help, how do I learn more? Now, the first stage is called the Apprentice Program. And the Apprentice Program is $5 a month, and you get access to more information. You get access to more groups. You get access to more books, more material. I'm working on more classes and other material for the apprentices to use. But most of all, what you'll find is I'm looking for people to mentor the apprentices. Now, right now, it's really just getting its feet under it. And I'm looking for people that will be active in the process. But the idea being that not as you're reading and studying and working with groups, having someone you can go to answer questions. Now, right now, all the mentor, I'm the only mentor, but it's a place where you can go, and I'm doing online get-togethers where you can all, you know, join on Zoom and discuss what's going on and help each other out. But it's all meant so that we can be better students of the Constitution. You know, as I've been going around the country on this tour, I kind of had a thought of, you know, I'm the constitutional Johnny Appleseed. I'm spreading seeds. And I'm spreading seeds through the people who are attending this event. But I'd like to spread even more seeds. And one of the ways I can do that is through the scholarship program, through the mentoring programs. So please go to constitutionscholars.com. Check it out if you're interested. Again, it's free to register. If you don't want to become an apprentice, there's no charge. You know, I'm not going to force you someday. It's not a try it and then buy it. It's completely up to you. But get access to this data. Educate yourself. Educate your children. Because they have to live in the country we leave them. And right now, the country that we're leaving them is not nearly as free as the one you and I inherited from our parents. So the best thing we can do is to defend our rights, to educate ourselves about what those rights are, about how we can legitimately defend and assert them, and then educate the rising generation to be free. And if you want more information, again, you can go to either the ConstitutionStudy.com website or the ConstitutionScholars.com website. If you have questions, you can always ask me on either of those websites. I don't want this to be a product website. I really want this to be a community of scholars, a place where men and women and young adults and children can learn, can study, can find advice and help, can participate in this great nation as free citizens, not as subjects. Now, America Out Loud plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24/7, and now you can even listen to the podcast on those apps. So please check out AmericaOutLoud.com. Make it your place to find news and events, and let us participate in this great nation that we have inherited.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.